Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Tyler Cupp, broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road with Straight Talk.
Selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And good afternoon for another edition of our Straight Talk program. Straight Talk, of course, broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Also with us today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Also with us today, Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road and Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, and Piedmont Medical Center, community built on care. Find out more at MountMedicalCenter.com. Well, I made it up in the world. My name's in the open. Thanks for that, Stone Man. Here with a very special guest today, Zach Limhouse, the historian at the Cultural and Heritage Museums. And I had to tell him to slow down a little bit because there is a lot I want to get to, and I wanted to make sure we get it all on the air. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things with the Cultural and Heritage Museums. But, Zach, first off, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tyler. Thank you, and thanks for having me.
So, as we always do, even though you've been on the program a couple of times, we want to reintroduce you to the listening audience. So tell us a little bit about Zach Limhouse.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm the staff historian, as you said, with Culture and Heritage Museums of York County. And I hope that the listeners know who the Culture and Heritage Museums are. But if not, the Culture and Heritage Museums are a family of four museums here in York County. We include the Main Street Children's Museum here on Main Street in Rock Hill.
Okay.
We include the Museum of York County, which is a natural history museum here in Rock Hill also. It's across the street from Dutchman Creek Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the McKelvey Center Campus, which is our archives and research facility. That's where my office is. And finally, we have an 800-acre historic plantation known as Historic Brattonsville in McConnell's. So, and we'll be doing a lot of talking about Historic Brattonsville today.
Yeah, so I have as the topic, and again, there's a lot to go into this. You know, we'll talk about the Cultural and Heritage Museum and some of the things that they offer. But the topic I have on the sheet here, enslaved ancestral burial ground. So where do we start with that, Zach? Where do we start with this?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start with the beginning, I guess, with what Brattonsville was historically. So historically, Brattonsville was settled by the Bratton family around 1766 on the ancestral land of the Catawba Nation. And where it is, like I said, it's in McConnell's, present-day McConnell's, South Carolina. And the site has three periods that we interpret historically. We interpret the American Revolution because of its connection with the Revolution. Colonel Bratton was a Revolutionary War veteran. He fought for the Patriots. And there was a battle that occurred near his home on July 12, 1780, called the Battle of Huck's Defeat. And that battlefield is on our property. So that's one period we interpret. We also interpret the antebellum period because the second generation of the Bratton family were cotton planters. Colonel Bratton started planting cotton around the time the cotton gin was invented in 1793, but the plantation really grew to its height under the stewardship of his youngest son, John Simpson Bratton Sr. So at the height of the plantation in 1843, there were about 139 enslaved people of African descent who were living and working on the plantation. So that's the second generation of the Bratton family, and that's our second period of significance that we interpret, the antebellum period. And then finally, the third period is the Reconstruction period. That would be the period following the American Civil War, and that's going to be the third generations, generation of the Bratton family. The enslaved ancestral burial ground that we're here to talk about today, it was part of the original 200 acres that Colonel Bratton purchased back in 1766.
So this would be the first period?
The very first generation.
Right. Okay.
We know that the burial ground is the final resting place of 481 people of African descent, at least 481 people of African descent. And many of them were quite likely enslaved on the Bratton Plantation during slavery.
And can I veer off just a moment?
Absolutely.
We're in the age, well past the age of the internet, where we can find so many facts and figures and things. And for the most part, we trust what's on there. But when it comes to stuff like this, I'm sure most of it's on the internet, but there has to be documents and texts that you guys go through, not just within the state, but nationally, right? Like, are there things that you're still finding out about this period from texts that you're just now seeing maybe in 2025?
Absolutely. So we can talk about a couple different sources, right, that historians like me can use to kind of piece together the past. As far as the enslaved population goes, we have sources like the first United States Census that was conducted in 1790. So that tells us that when the census was conducted in 1790, there were 12 people of African descent that Colonel Bratton had enslaved at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, it didn't give their names because the census in 1790 didn't give anybody's name, white or black, mm-hmm. except the head of household. So Colonel Bratton's name is there, but everybody else is just an age, a race, and a gender, right? So we can piece together that there were 12 enslaved people in 1790. Colonel Bratton's will is another great source. In 1815, when Colonel Bratton dies, his will lists 23 enslaved people. But this time the will lists them by name. And it's interesting because the Revolutionary War story we talked about earlier, where on July 12, 1780, the British come to Colonel Bratton's house to arrest him for being a patriot leader.
Right.
That's on July 11. And according to family tradition, Martha, who is Colonel Bratton's wife, she's there alone with her five children. Colonel Bratton is not home. He's away with the Patriot militia. And according to family tradition, family stories, Martha sends an enslaved boy named Watt to warn her husband that the British are at her house. And what's neat about the 1815 will is that it lists Watt as one of those 24 enslaved people. So I can document Watt on that will.
Yeah.
As well as his wife, Polly. And the connection to the cemetery is that the cemetery, like I said, has at least 481 burials. Of those burials, if the graves are marked, they're marked with unengraved field stones that you might kick up while you're plowing, with the exception of one grave. The grave of Watt and his wife Polly have a headstone that the Brattons hired a very prominent Charleston stone cutter to create. And the headstone is for Watt and his wife, Polly. And the headstone references Watt's faithfulness to his master, Colonel Bratton, during the American Revolution. So this headstone does a couple things. We can use the headstone as a primary source, just like we use the 1815 will or the 1790 census. What the headstone tells us, it tells us the names of two of the people that are buried there, Watt and Polly, right? Those are the only two people we know by name to be buried in the Brattonsville Cemetery, the cemetery which we are calling the Enslaved Ancestral Burial Ground. But what it also does is it helps me document Watt as being the first enslaved person on the plantation that I can document. I can't document any enslaved person on the Bratton plantation prior to Watt because the epitaph says during the American Revolution, I know that he was enslaved around 1780.
Well, and I know we had to get to this eventually because I definitely wanted to get to this. One of the things that jumped out to me when we were talking before we came on the air is, and you just mentioned the number a couple times, 481.
Correct.
And you said that that number was larger than what you thought it was going to be when you guys started looking at this burial ground.
Yeah, it's larger than what we anticipated. So let me give you a little background on the cemetery project, and then we'll get to that.
Sure.
So, Brattonsville opened in 1977 as a historic site, and we've always known, we being the Culture and Heritage Museums, we've known that the cemetery was there, but we didn't own it. We didn't own that land until 2001. So it's been known in the community, especially the African-American community, that there is a burial site there. We procured the land in 2001, and then in 2005, we noticed that there was some vandalism going on with the cemetery, and we removed Watt and Polly's headstone and relocated it to our archival facility where it could be better protected and preserved until we could return it back to its original location.
Sure.
We had to make sure that the site was protected because, like I said, there was evidence of vandalism occurring specifically to Watt and Polly's headstone. So what they did in 2005 when they removed the stone, they put a metal spike in the center of the hole where the stone came out of, so we could always find it with a metal detector, so we could always return the stone when it was safe enough to do so. began early documentation of the cemetery around 2011. We had a group of Winthrop University students. They were archaeology students under the direction of a professor at Winthrop named Christina Brooks. And she came out in 2011 with her students, and they did a surface survey. So they didn't use ground-penetrating radar. All they did was they cleared back the leaves, and they did a visual inspection. They were looking for depressions in the earth that would indicate a grave. They were also looking for stones that might mark the head or the foot of a grave.
And when you say depressions, you mean like indentions in the ground?
Correct. A physical indention in the ground. And that occurs from when a body decomposes, right? The space that it once filled is no longer there, and the soil will collapse, right? To fill that space, which causes that depression. You get a deeper depression if the person happened to be buried in a casket, right?
Yeah.
A wood coffin, because when the coffin rots, it also opens up some space that will then be filled by the dirt, and it causes that depression.
Wow.
So Christina Brooks and her Winthrop University students were able to find 46. They were able to identify 46 probable graves just from this surface survey they did. So we had the understanding that there were at least 46. You know, conventional wisdom among archaeologists, and I'm not one, full disclosure, but the conventional wisdom among archaeologists, it typically is if you know that there's a number that you can identify, double it, and you've got a general idea of how many people are likely buried there. So with 46, we thought maybe there's 100 people buried here.
Sure.
Right? In 2022, I received a grant from the South Carolina Sester Centennial Commission. Sester Centennial is a tongue twister, so it's a lot easier to say SC250. Sester Centennial is the 250th celebration of the American Revolution in South Carolina. So this commission was established in 2019 to celebrate the revolution here in South Carolina, and they began offering grants. So I applied for a grant to help us document, interpret, and preserve the Brattonsville Cemetery because of its connection to Watt. Like I said earlier, Watt allegedly delivered this message, according to family tradition, to his master during the American Revolution, and Watt is buried there, and his headstone mentions the American Revolution. So this was right up SC250's alley. This is the kind of project they were interested in funding.
Yeah, historical significance, and it's a fact that they know that they can talk about, yeah.
And it connected to the Revolution in a very important and unique way. So they granted us some money, and it allowed us to start this documentation process in earnest, which we did, and part of that money went to hiring some archaeologists from the South Carolina Institute of Archaeology and Anthropology. They're based in Columbia. They work closely with the University of South Carolina, and they sent some archaeologists out to document the site using ground-penetrating radar.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there because you mentioned this before we came on, and I'm fascinated by this.
Sure.
And you, what is it, GPR?
GPR, ground-penetrating radar. Now, remember earlier, just a moment ago, when I said I'm not an archaeologist? keep that in mind when I explain to you what GPR is.
But you saw them do this, right?
I did get to see them do it.
In fact, explain what they did.
He let me push the GPR machine for a little bit. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's about the size of a push lawnmower. It's a little bit bigger. And you push it along the ground, and what it does is it's shooting radar into the ground. It is measuring soil displacement and the depth at which that displacement in the soil is occurring.
That's fascinating.
So they're looking for a displacement that is occurring approximately 6 feet deep, right? That's consistent with a grave. And then they're looking at the length of the grave. If it's approximately 6 feet long, you've got an adult person, right?
Yeah.
By extension, if it's a slightly smaller grave, you can interpret that as being maybe an infant was buried there. And we know that there was high infant mortality rates. So there are quite a few graves in our cemetery, the enslaved ancestral burial ground at Brattonsville, that are smaller, that indicate that maybe there's a lot of infants buried there due to that high infant mortality rate. But so they used this GPR device, and they ran it over the cemetery. The cemetery is in about a five-acre tract of wooded land. And they identified, using this, at least 481 probable graves.
Now, that was included in the about 100 that the students at Winthrop had discovered, right?
The around 100 we anticipated. The students at Winthrop found about 46. So it did include that 46.
Right, right.
But 481, and I want to note that it's at least 481 burials because there are likely more. The GPR, like I said, is measuring disturbance in the soil, and because it's in a wooded area, there are quite a few tree roots. So that was interrupting some of the data that they were getting. So some of it might have been a tree root, or it might have been a grave, right? So I'm careful to say at least 481, because it is likely that there are more.
How long does this? How big is this plot of land? This burial ground?
Like I said, it's in a 5 acre tract.
Five acres, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's next with this? Like, we know what we have. We have an idea what we have. You got a grant to kind of bring some folks from Columbia to do the GPR, the radar stuff underground. So what's kind of – where are we at now with this process?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about what the grant actually allowed us to do other than just GPR.
Okay.
So when we started this project, and from the very beginning, you know, from the time we purchased this land in 2001, the – Black community has been very interested in this project, specifically the descendants of those that are buried there. And I want to take a moment to acknowledge and thank our descendant community, because Brattonsville is exceedingly lucky that we have a community of African Americans who can trace their ancestry back to those who were enslaved at Brattonsville.
Wow.
And not every historic plantation site out there can say that, right? Yeah. We are exceedingly lucky. So we have a very large, very active descendant community, both of people descended from the formerly enslaved, but also people descended from the white enslaver. And they meet about once a month together. And they have monthly meetings, they discuss different topics, and they work very closely with us at Historic Brattonsville on all sorts of projects, on programming, special programming, on different exhibits we do. So they're always very active, very involved with us. And the cemetery was no exception. They were very active with us from the very beginning. They helped us draft text, for example. So part of what this grant covered was some interpretive text panels. There's two of them out on the site. So when guests come to visit, they can learn a little bit about the history of the site, learn a little bit about those who are likely buried there. So the descendants helped us draft those text panels. They helped us name the cemetery, the enslaved ancestral burial ground. They helped us determine how to mark the graves. So we determined, working with the descendants, that we wanted to put a head marker at every one of the 481 identified graves.
Oh, wow.
Now, like I said earlier, some of them have unengraved field stones already, and Watt and Polly's grave have that engraved marble headstone. So we didn't want the markers that we selected to detract in any way from those historic stones. However, we also didn't want the markers that we were installing to be confused with historic stones. We wanted it to be very clear when guests visit the site that these were not put there in 1837. These were put there in 2024, 2025, right? So what we decided, working with the descendants, we decided to use a kind of metal, a steel. It's called weathering steel or Core 10 steel. And what's unique about this kind of metal is that as it ages and patinas, instead of getting weaker, because, you know, a lot of metal, when it rusts, it gets weaker. Core 10 steel, when it rusts, it actually gets stronger. And as a result, it's used a lot of times in things like bridges, bridge construction, and monuments, because it's a very beautiful kind of uniform patina when it rusts. So for those reasons, we elected to make our head markers out of this Core 10 steel. So our exhibits department at the Culture and Heritage Museums fabricated, you know, a little over 481, about 500 of these Core 10 steel head markers, and we've got one installed at the head of each one of these 481 graves.
That's fantastic. Going to take a pause for the calls. We're going to take our mid-program break. Another reminder that Straight Talk broadcasts live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And here at Substation 2 across from Winthrop, they make fresh subs and salads 6 days a week, but they do it with a special ingredient. How do they do it? On the count of three. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Back with more after this.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
We hope you'll choose The Nest to deliver your newest bundle of joy. The Nest is a new labor and delivery recovery postpartum unit at Piedmont Medical Center Fort Mill, working to make your pregnancy and childbirth experience as easy and enjoyable as possible. Our physicians and nursing staff at Piedmont are dedicated to giving expectant mothers the maternity care they want and need. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140. Or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Soup, here it is. Soup, here it is. Fight those cold weather chills with a cup of hot soup at Substation 2. We serve a rotating selection of flavors and never know what we feel like fixing, but it's all delicious. Soup and sandwich, what a great combo at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winter.
Straight Talk on WRHI FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Our Straight Talk program brought to you in part by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Also with us today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Tyler Cupp here with Zach Limhouse, the historian at the Cultural and Heritage Museums, talking about the enslaved ancestral burial ground that has 481 grave sites as of now. And there's a lot of things we got to get to in the last seven or so minutes. I want to definitely get to the opening you're going to have for people to see this, but first and foremost, you talked about security measures and protecting and preserving these sites of what you're currently doing to them right now.
Sure. So part of the grant also allowed us to implement some security measures. We were able to put up a fence with locking gates. We were able to install some access, dirt road that allows people to access the cemetery, a gravel parking lot, gives people a place to park, but also some locking drive gates to add additional security. We were also able to put up some security cameras to add that additional protection. And because we were able to adequately protect the site, we were able to bring Watt and Polly's headstone back. As you recall, we removed it in 2005 because of the threat of vandalism that was occurring. But now that the security measures are in place, I'm very happy to say that our preservation staff reinstalled that headstone in its exact location just a couple weeks ago.
And before we get to the descendant opening and public opening of this enslaved ancestral burial ground, I was very curious to hear that you guys kind of have some theories about why there were so many that you found, 481,
yes,
possibly and counting, could be more. But I mean, that's a lot for one small site up there in Brattonsville.
481's a lot. We have at Historic Brattonsville probably one of the largest cemeteries for enslaved people in this part of South Carolina. I mean, 481 is a lot. So there are a couple theories, as you mentioned. So one is the high infant mortality rate that I mentioned earlier, right? Children are dying at a much quicker rate than adults at that time, especially in the enslaved community. So we believe that quite a few of the people buried there are infants. Another theory is that it could have been a community graveyard. for neighboring plantations, right? Mm. So there are neighboring planter families that live next to the Bratton plantation who are also enslaving people. And the Bratton children are actually marrying into those families. So it's plausible, at least, that when the enslaved people on those neighboring plantations died, that they were also being buried in the enslaved ancestral burial ground, and it was being used as a community burial ground. And finally, it's possible that burials continued after emancipation. Yeah. It is possible that there are free people of color that are buried in the enslaved ancestral burial ground.
Interesting. All right, so you talked about number of graves. What was that you were referencing? We were talking about off air? Because you have 481.
Yeah, at least 481.
Okay, mm-hmm. But you there could be more here.
Potentially. Yeah. And we may never be able to document that. Maybe as technology gets a little bit better.
Sure.
GPR technology. There's wonderful things people do. They do with LIDAR now. Again, this is all out of my wheelhouse, way above my head. But no, with the advancements in technology, we may one day be able to identify more. And we may be able to, as we continue to do research in the archives, we may be able to identify the names of people in addition to Watt and Polly.
Yeah. Because I think that was one of my next questions is how long are we from that point at looking at that? And I guess that's just technology, right?
As far as identifying more graves, probably advancements in technology is what we would need. As far as identifying more names of people potentially buried there, just more research in the archives.
Yeah.
Maybe a document comes to light that we've not seen before. For example, I was reviewing a pension application not too long ago for a formerly enslaved man named Jim Williams who escaped the plantation to join the Union Army. And his widow filed a pension application in 1893. And in the application, she mentions that he was married before to a woman named Hannah who died on the Bratton Place during slavery times. So it is probable that if Hannah died on the Bratton Place during slavery times, she is most likely buried in that cemetery.
Right.
So we will never know exactly where Hannah's grave is,
yeah,
but she is quite likely one of those 481 people that are buried there.
Wow. All right, so last thing. Tell me about this descendant and public opening you guys are scheduled to have here.
So the descendant opening already happened. That happened on February 22nd,
okay.
So just last month. The descendants put together this beautiful ceremony. It got some press coverage if anyone wants to look it up. But it was an absolutely wonderful ceremony. The descendants really did a great job pulling it all together. They honored the 481 people that we know of that are buried there. They honored the people that we know of as well as the people we don't know. And they did a wonderful wreath-laying ceremony at Watt and Polly's headstone. It was absolutely beautiful. And so I thank our descendants for organizing that. However, the cemetery is not open to the public yet. That was just a private descendant opening.
Yeah.
The public opening, I'm pleased to say, will be on March 29th. It'll be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Historic Brattonsville. I don't have any more details I can share at this time other than the date and the time, but I hope your listeners will keep their eyes glued to our social media accounts, our website, chmuseums.org. For information on that upcoming public opening. There should be a press release dropping fairly soon.
And will this be something that's just kind of open all the time? Or
yes.
Okay.
So the cemetery will be open during Brattonsville's regular business hours following the March 29 opening.
Yeah.
Just during our regular business hours. I want to mention there's no cost to visit the cemetery once it's open. Visitors will just need to check in at the visitor center so we know who's on site. But there's no cost to actually, if you're just visiting the cemetery. If you want to visit the rest of the site, adults get in for $8. But if you're just there to visit the cemetery, once it's open, no cost. Just please check in at the visitor center.
Well, Zach Lemhouse, historian at the Cultural and Heritage Museums, very, very fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Zach.
Thank you.
All right, we're broadcasting live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. And here at Substation 2, they make fresh subs and salads 6 days a week, but how do they do it? 1, 2, 3, slice, 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 slice. Garden, garden, garden. Manning will be back tomorrow. Bye.